inviting diverse thought leaders to explore topics designed to spark our collective imagination. Welcome to AKQA Insight.
Brands, you know, more than ever now, have to continue to reinvent themselves. And that doesn't mean change your mission or change your vision. It's actually the opposite of that. It's maintain your vision and mission, but adapt, stay fresh, find new ways to reach people. You know, don't accept the status quo anymore because people are moving too fast. We could have just stayed a sports performance company and we would have done great. And we would have grown and maybe doubled every single year. And, you know, we would have had every athlete all throughout the world using our products. But that's not the mission. The mission is to help everybody on earth move better and live better, right? So we have to take some risks.
Today, we're joined by Jim Huther, CEO of HyperOS, a health technology company and one of the fastest growing companies in the US. I'm your host, Sam Sterling. I'm the Managing Director for AKQA in Greater China and Japan. And today I'm talking to Jim about all things innovation. So Jim, the first thing that I was wanting to speak to you about is innovation as a concept. You've said that one of your biggest goals is for HyperOS to be on a list of the world's most innovative companies. We are unbelievably excited to get you there. And I'm really interested to hear more from you about what innovation means to HyperOS beyond the usual things like new product features.
Great question. And first off, excited to be on the podcast, on the show. I know that AKQA has done a phenomenal job for us and been excited to be on for quite some time. So thank you for having me on. I think for us, you know, when we look at innovation, it's really about, it's more than just the products, more than just the technology. It's really around the whole kind of embodiment of what we represent as a company. Going back into just the mission and vision of the company and how we want to position ourselves, not only in the US, but throughout the world, as being a company that's forward-thinking, being a company that takes some chances, that really thinks outside the box and looks, you know, downstream to how trends and cultures and different areas of the world are looking at health, wellness, technology, and never staying, you know, stagnant, always moving forward, always progressing, always challenging ourselves as a company and organization to be a first mover, to be a premium brand, to think of, you know, how we want to have our customers perceive us and to challenge ourselves in that environment. So I think it goes beyond just the technology and the products. It's really what we represent and the mission behind the company.
Yeah, I was listening to an interview with you recently where you said that you believe there's as much value in innovation in process or strategy as there is in product. So what do you consider to be your most unseen innovation?
Yeah, well, I mean, one of them really was our business model, to be honest. And, you know, we had a business model that was very experiential, as you know very well. We, you know, predicated all of our strategies around the fact that our products were based on touch, feel, and physical experience. When people experienced the different modalities, whether it be percussion, vibration, thermal technology, pneumatic compression, there was a reaction that they had that was very viral, changing the physiology of the human body. So we knew that as part of our kind of company DNA, we had a series of products that would do something to the body that not a lot of other products could do. So we doubled down on that strategy. We said, how do we look at the environment and get as many people as possible to touch, feel, and react to the products in a positive way? And we developed a whole experiential strategy around what we call EDMs, experience delivery mechanisms, finding the personal trainers, finding the massage therapists, finding the performance trainers, people that could deliver the experience and educate the consumer, somebody that the consumer would trust and want to learn more about the product. So our whole model was predicated around experience, and it was very, very successful and still is. Of course, in this new environment with COVID, we've had to completely shift our thinking So now we've shifted into in-home experiences and digital experience and all those different elements to reach people in a really creative way. So that piece of our overall kind of innovation strategy around our business model, I think, was a significant competitive advantage for us for the past 3 to 4 years.
It's really interesting that you mention that, because when you guys first sent us a box full of product, I know that people were first playing with it like this was a novelty. And then yes. Now it's actually become a thing. Like, people are constantly charging them. They get passed around the studio. People are borrowing from them for the weekend. Like, you're right. The second that people actually get them on their bodies and in their hands and actually get to play with them, It fundamentally changes the way people feel about the product.
It really does. And I actually remember, Sam, when I first sent products your way, I think, you know, we've been working together for 18 months or so. And I remember the very first time we connected and I sent a bunch of products and you said, oh my gosh, like, this is so cool. The mission's cool. The products feel great. I understand. And then you had millions of ideas within the first day. But it is very true. And I think that a mistake companies can make is trying to replicate a business model because they've seen somebody do it successfully without evaluating what their competitive advantages are, right? Like, this wouldn't work for us, this model, if we had a, you know, protein powder or, you know, iPhone case, because we know that every person that buys a Hypervolt tells 8 people. That's the data that we have. Wow. So how do we grow that exponentially? The best way to do that is to get as many people to experience the product as possible, as fast as possible.
So something that would be pretty intrinsic to then is culture and having a culture of innovation. I'm interested to know how you guys have created and then kept that culture of innovation, particularly because you are considered one of the fastest growing companies in the US. And so how are you maintaining that, not just from the beginning, but as you scale?
There really are 2 parts to this question. The first one, you know, a culture of innovation really goes back to the very kind of foundation of the company with our very first product in kind of committing to the fact that we didn't just want to come out with products to sell products. We wanted to come out with products because we would have either a product or a feature or something that would significantly make what we were delivering better for the world, better for the environment, better for the sports community. And we've always scoured the earth for the best components, the best parts, worked with the leading scientists, the world's best athletes, to take that feedback and then deliver something that actually is game-changing and that delivers a better result than, you know, something else on the market or something that's never been delivered before. So, you know, from the very beginning, we've always challenged ourselves to, much like, you know, a Dyson or a Tesla, you know, you're constantly looking at the next innovation and the next evolution. So I think from a perspective of product innovation, you know, working with aerospace engineers, scientists, pro athletes has always been what we're about. And then I think the other side of innovation is just embracing a company culture where people feel free to share ideas. You know, we have 100 employees right now, but we're in 65 countries worldwide and, you know, we'll sell over 1 million products, right? So we would be remiss in not saying that every person in here with 100 employees can't contribute in a big way, whether you're in accounting or you're in product development or marketing or whatever department you're in. We want all 100 minds. Right? There's no reason to silo. So we have a really free thinking, open environment. The CEO's office is always open. The founder's office is always open. Our VPs, their office is always open. And everybody, whether you're in, you know, accounting and want to contribute to marketing, or you're in marketing and want to contribute to sales or accounting, you feel free that you can. And because of that, we've fostered a culture of kind of free spirit and innovation and collaboration that I think is very different than other environments.
The Hypervolt, which I believe was the first product that was launched by HyperIce after you became CEO, famously sold out in, was it 7 hours?
It was, yeah. It was a little bit under 7 hours, yep. 6 hours and 47 minutes.
Not that you're counting.
Yeah, not at all.
So what I'm really interested to hear is, how do you go about creating a market for a product that is so innovative? Like, it's got all these new aspects. It's also a new tool. Are you creating demand for a product a lot of people didn't even necessarily know they needed or existed?
It's a combination of delivering a great product, because at the core of the company, we make great products, right? But we're not selling the products. We're really selling the movement. And that piece of it is really important. People connect more emotionally with what we're trying to accomplish as a company, and that's to accelerate human performance, to help everybody on earth move better and live better. So I think that kind of capturing that essence has been really important in our growth trajectory and growth profile, because people want to, they want to be part of the community. They want to be part of the mission and the movement. They want to learn more about what the products are doing to the physiology of the human body. They want to contribute to advancing health and wellness, because it is a really great mission. I mean, I always say I'm lucky because I love what I do. I love business, as you know very well, and I know you do too. But also, we have a product that really does change people's lives, right? So I think for us, when we launched the Hypervolt, we had already set the foundation of the company. We had other products that were very successful, just not at the level of the Hypervolt. But we had relationships, you know, with key partners like an Equinox or an Orange Theory, every professional training room in the U.S. and in international markets, China, Japan, Korea. And we had this foundation and reputation for being a sports performance company. The Hypervolt allowed us to take the sports performance company in us and now bring that to the greater environment around health and wellness. And it was a very viral moment. I'll never forget it. I know exactly where I was sitting. And from there, that is kind of our iPhone. The Hypervolt is our staple product. And, you know, the Viper and the Venom and all these other products are our, you know, AirPods and our MacBook and all these different elements. But that iPhone, you know, most likely will always be the Hypervolt for us.
Right. Okay. I find that absolutely fascinating. Now, you mentioned a little bit earlier the current context that we're all operating in, that is the COVID-19 experience. I think you and I can both agree that, as our ECD in Australia and New Zealand puts it, we can't say that we're innovative unless we're prepared to reframe our view of the unexpected as an opportunity. And I think it's pretty safe to say that for most people, this period we're working in is quite unexpected. Yes. One of the things I'm really interested to hear from you is, how has this period fueled innovation for Hyperice? How have the constraints that we're finding ourselves in, you know, been a source of inspiration for you guys?
I love this question. I think that, you know, this is a very bad situation for the world. But I think for us, what we had to do is we had to really test our adaptability as a company to make sure that we could find new innovative ways to reach our audiences, to develop in-rolls, to communicate with the market in a proper and appropriate way. And this challenged us. And I always say to our team, you know, we cannot let the market uncertainty create a, you know, mental obstacle for our creativity or progress, right? This is the time where we have 100 great minds and people can use every bit of their mind to create solutions and to navigate this challenging environment. So we adapted very quickly. We, you know, within kind of, I remember we shut down the office on Thursday, right when the day that the NBA news hit here in the US.
Wow.
And then Friday was a little bit of a weird day. And that weekend, I remember just thinking about, okay, we got to reposition ourselves and we got to get ahead of this and start thinking about how we're going to work in the digital environment, start thinking about how we're going to connect with consumers that are at home fitness individuals. How is this whole landscape going to shape and shift? We came out the gate Monday morning. I was so proud of the team. People had ideas. We had virtual happy hours. We were doing online programming. We were doing virtual panels with sports performance influencers. We were trying to find partnerships with companies that were also trying to do the same thing as us, like create a communication path for how we reach the customers, because the customers are all still there. the people that need and use our products, they're all there. We just have to find them in a different place now, right? They're not buying the products at Equinox. They're not experiencing them at Orange Theory, but they're still Equinox and Orange Theory enthusiasts and customers. So leveraging those partnerships to reach the consumers in a compelling way. I think the businesses that can take a situation like this, be adaptable, grow from it, learn and push themselves, push their creativity are the ones that are going to end up the best and most diversified. And I think we've done a good job of that. The other element that was really important for us is it did test the diversity of our business, which we've been working on for a really long time. You know, an omni-channel approach, massage spa, CrossFit, performance, physical therapy, all those different channels for Hyperice, but then you take those channels and you say, okay, well, that same channel mix works in every country in the world. So I think a combination of getting really creative in the digital environment and testing ourselves there and then pushing the diversity of our business has been something that our whole team has grown from, learned from, and we'll be a better business coming out of this.
Yeah, we love working with Hyperice because you're not just one of our most ambitious clients, but also one of the most innovative right through to your core, as well as with everything that you go to market with. I know it was really exciting for our team to work with your team on Hyperweek when I believe that many clients would probably have just delayed the kickoff or just tried to battle on doing the whole thing via regular video conference. So it was really exciting that you guys were willing to do things so differently, turn it into this gamified model with homework and, you know, using cloud-based tools and everything else. I understand that you did some pretty innovative things during this period with other partners. You briefly mentioned Orange Theory just then. Can you tell me a little bit more about exactly what happened with Orange Theory?
Yes. So Orange Theory has been another company that is innovative at their core. You know, their whole fitness model is based around technology. And, you know, they just launched their partnership with Apple Health recently as well, which made national headlines, obviously. So we've been testing and piloting with them for almost, I'd say, 15 months. And this was actually an opportunity where our pilot was accelerated because, you know, we kind of looked at each other and said, hey, let's create a really cool digital programming platform where we could extend the message of health, wellness, recovery, body maintenance to the user at home in a really creative way. And, you know, after a couple of brainstorming sessions, we were able to create some really interesting programming that tied in with their, you know, health tech mindset. And it worked for both parties. They were able to deliver something to the at-home user that was differentiated. And we were able to continue to communicate with the customer that needs recovery, body maintenance, and warm-up. So that's been a very exciting initiative for us. And there were a lot of partners that really stepped up and, you know, embraced this. It's not going to be easy and it's not going to be the same, but we're going to create something new and differentiated. And if it doesn't work, we're going to try something new. And that's been our mindset all along. And that's actually like AKQA. You know, I always say this. I remember our first conversation, Sam, and one of the things that was so impressive about you and the rest of the team is the outside the box thinking and the guerrilla tactics. And I remember there's a time when you were like, hey, so what are you kind of looking at? And I was ready to give you a budget. And I think I even threw out a number and you said, you know, I don't think we need to go there. Like, why don't we take over the whole tennis tournament with Naomi Osaka in Japan by doing, you know, push notification and airdrops. And I was like, oh my gosh, I love this company. That is like, so I think a lot of the key elements that we've been working with you on together in both China and Japan. And to your point, when we did Hyper Week and we really explored the China market and what was happening. So the learnings that you've given us in what we've done in China have not only helped us significantly in China, but we've been able to take some of those learnings and then apply them to the US and be ahead of where we normally would be if we didn't have those type of workshops and deep dives. So the creativity goes both ways. And I think that, you know, our team has learned a lot from, you know, all the expertise and experience both in China and Japan that we've resonated around the globe and been able to apply in a big way.
Oh, that's incredible to hear. I've got a big question for you then. Do you think that this thinking will be a long-term shift, or are we going to gradually revert back to things as we have known them in recent years? as markets and people start to return to the way things were?
I think it's going to be different for 12 to 18 months. And beyond that, it's tough for me to kind of forecast how people react. I think it's going to depend on what market, what country, the socioeconomic group, all those different elements. But I can say that I think when you look at even Zoom calls and Zoom messaging, I mean, it took something this big to get people comfortable with doing conference calls and to really engage in them. And I think that now businesses and just organizations are going to start reevaluating travel, just even when you are allowed to travel, not only the health and wellness piece of it, but the financial piece. Like, do I need to send a team member across the country for a 3-hour meeting in New York? Like, that personal interaction that normally is so important, you know, it's still important and a differentiator, but it might not be, you know, essential, so to speak, for the business. And so I do think there's going to be a shift in mindset on marketing and how we reach people, how we travel, how we initiate entertainment. I think people's habits are going to be challenged, specifically in the fitness and wellness space. Like, you look at, you know, really crowded gyms. I think that's an area where people are going to be a little bit reticent to go back to your facility if there aren't the level of, you know, cleanliness measures and things of that nature to make you feel comfortable. So I think brands, companies, organizations are going to have to do kind of go the extra step to make people feel comfortable, safe, secure. And I think the digital landscape is just going to continue to be more and more important.
At AKQA, we say that we exist to create a better future, and Hyperice's ambition is obviously to help the world move better. So this is a really nice segue into the last kind of area I was hoping to chat to you about today, which is innovating into the future. I've heard you say that business is your hobby, which I really adore, because it's definitely something that I nerd out about as well. So what I'm interested to hear from you is, what do you see as the role of innovation in keeping businesses and brands relevant as they continue to age and grow?
Great question. I think that brands, more than ever now, have to continue to reinvent themselves. And that doesn't mean change your mission or change your vision. It's actually the opposite of that. It's maintain your vision and mission, but adapt, stay fresh, find new ways to reach people. You know, don't accept the status quo anymore, because people are moving too fast. There's a lot of, there's competitors throughout the world. People are looking at environments. You look at our space right now, the health technology space, and specifically recovery, body maintenance, and warm up. This space didn't even exist 7-8 years ago. And now, I mean, it is growing at a tremendous pace. It's expanded far outside the bounds of sports performance. We're looking at human performance in the workplace. We're looking at performance technology and gaming and police and fire. And how do we, you know, advance the aviation field by increasing pilot performance, which then has an effect on passenger safety, right? So it's becoming part of the overall kind of ecosystem of the way that people evaluate the value of your health and wellness. And it's more than career longevity. It's actually like employee longevity. It's your productivity. And so I think that in our example, we could have just stayed a sports performance company and we would have done great. And we would have grown and maybe doubled every single year. And, you know, we would have had every athlete all throughout the world using our products. But that's not the mission. The mission is to help everybody on earth move better and live better, right? So we have to take some risks. We got to enter esports. We got to try something new in police and fire. We got to create an innovative service in massage therapy. We need to, you know, explore artificial intelligence and things like this for the future and start different processes and experiments that we think might be big in the future. We got to take those chances. So for me, I think to be a truly innovative company, you need to just continue to advance your thinking. And that doesn't mean you have to be a technology company that's creating products. It doesn't mean that you have to, you know, be a company that's developing the leading scientific breakthrough. It just means you need to develop your process and your mindset and continue to advance it, and find new ways to be fresh. That's one of the things that that you guys have actually helped us with in a really big way, is to think about things, you know, outside the box, think more globally. That's something that I've always felt really passionate about. And you've brought a lot of energy to our team there on, hey, look, let's take these learnings. Let's not think we can take what we do in the US and put it into China and it's going to work, because it's not. It's very, very different. And we have to adapt our strategy and reinvent the way that we think about China and reinvent the way we think about Japan. So that to me is really important. Just constantly kind of striving to create a fresh kind of outlook. And I think that keeps us advancing. And as a result, innovation occurs.
That's a nice segue to my next question, which was around China in particular. Yes. Obviously, the opportunity of China is quite unique. It is a very different market from the rest of the world.
Yes.
So I'm interested to hear what the role of Greater China Market plays in your overall goal of perpetually innovating and helping people to move better.
China is a massive, massive opportunity for us. And, you know, we have our whole team thinking globally now about, I mean, almost everything we do, we think about China, we think about, you know, Asia in general. And we've kind of trained ourselves to think that way because the opportunity is huge. If you look at, you know, China, I think it represents 30% of the world's economic growth over the last couple of years. It's booming. Everybody there, I think more than greater than 60 or 70% wants a healthier lifestyle. Their whole health technology and wearable explosion is occurring there in a really big way. People are, you know, looking for innovative ways to advance health and longevity. The millennial market is now getting more involved and learning about recovery. They're getting more involved in fitness. You have intelligent gyms popping up all over the place. You've taught us a lot about some of those and the models around those. So it is a massive opportunity for us. And, you know, we have to be very tactical and we have to do a combination of creating these, you know, immersive experiences. We need to create digital experiences. We need to align with the right influencers. And I think that companies that just think about the US that are based in the US, you're missing such a big opportunity. Because, I mean, we do 35% of our revenue internationally right now. And our goal is for that to be 50% by the end of 2021. And I'm very confident we'll get there. And if you look at Nike, Nike's doing 75% or 73% of their business internationally, right? And I know you're very familiar with that, obviously, in working with Nike. So, you know, and then you have other companies, which I won't mention, in similar spaces, which have, you know, achieved 10% or 12%. And we want to be the company that is global, and China is the biggest market for us outside of the US. And my premise is I think China could be bigger than the US for us if we do it right. And that's what one of the things we uncovered in, you know, Hyper Week and working with you is, you know, how lucrative the market is, how do we create inspiring messaging? So I'm really excited. As you know, I've been learning Mandarin too. I haven't been like tuning up on it too much over the past few months just because of COVID kind of interrupted my podcasts.
I can recommend a lot of Chinese television.
Really? Okay. That's great. But yeah, it's a massive opportunity. It's a big focus for us.
That's incredible. Look, one more question before I let you go. What are you most excited for in the future?
Ooh, great question. Recently, I was very excited about the Normatec acquisition. You know, we acquired kind of the second biggest player in the recovery category. And it was our first, it was actually our second acquisition, but it was our first kind of big acquisition. It was actually the biggest acquisition ever in this space. So that was really, really exciting for us because we actually combined the teams completely. So, you know, we went from having 46 employees to now 100 employees. The CEO of Normatec is now the chief innovation officer of Hyperice. So that was a really big and exciting move for us. And, you know, we have manufacturing efficiencies. We have, we're now able to offer full solutions with percussion, vibration, pneumatic compression, thermal technology. It's something that we wanted to do for a long time. And we, from start to finish, closed that acquisition in 4 months, which I think is pretty record-breaking. But that's been really fun for me. And to do that during COVID, when we're trying to merge these companies, we closed on February 28th. We were out there in Boston, where the company was headquarters, meeting the team and starting to integrate. And then the NBA news hit and we were remote, and we've integrated the teams, finalized the acquisition all in this remote environment. So I've been pretty proud of that and happy with the team and the way that we responded. So that's been exciting. And then I think for the future, I just think right now we're at the very, very inception of where we can be. You know, we always say we think that the Hypervolt could be the electric toothbrush for the body, right? For the soft tissue. Mm-hmm. We think that this could be, you know, the Sonicare, so to speak, for the human body, right? Like every morning we think that there should be routines for people to use to increase circulation, to create body maintenance. It's more than just, you know, athlete recovery. So I can't wait for the time when we can say, hey, look, these products are all over the world in every environment, and people are relying on them as a daily regimen to improve their health and wellness. That's really important to me. The second thing is I really want to be on the world's most innovative companies list. Not just, again, not because of the list, but because it would have everything we had to do to be on the list.
Yeah.
Right? Everything that we had to put into the company to be recognized as being one of the world's most innovative companies.
Oh, that's incredibly exciting. And we are unbelievably thrilled to be part of that journey with you guys. Thank you
Likewise. So
much for your time today. It was fantastic to get to speak with you and hear more about the Hyperice story.
Well, you're a big part of the Hyperice story. So appreciate all the work. And thank you, AKQA team, just for, you know, all the creativity. We're really fired up, and it's been one of the best partnerships that we've ever had, and can't wait for the future.
Thanks for listening, and please join us for the next episode of AKQA Insight.